On the 14th of May, I went to Cyprus for the annual spring conference of EMWA, the European Medical Writers Association, so that I could spend a few days hanging out with medical writers. If you don't know what medical writers do, well, there are probably as many definitions of medical writing as there are medical writers. But many medical writers work for the pharmaceutical industry, either as employees of pharma companies or, like the medical writers who work in my own company, Dianthus Medical, as service providers with pharma companies as their clients. There's a lot of paperwork involved in all the clinical trials and other stuff that needs to be done before drugs can be licensed, and many medical writers spend their time writing protocols that tell you how to do clinical trials, reports of clinical trials, and higher level documents that summarise all the clinical trials that have been done on a particular drug. Writing up papers for publication in peer-reviewed medical literature is another regular source of employment for medical writers, but there are plenty of other things medical writers do as well, as you'll hear shortly. Most medical writers come from a science background. A typical medical writer is someone who found that the part of their PhD they enjoyed best was actually writing the thesis. But there are other routes into the profession as well, as again you'll hear shortly. The EMWA conference is very much focused around a well-developed training programme based on a large number of half-day workshops on a variety of topics including the mechanics of writing, such as grammar and syntax, details of drug regulatory processes, clinical trial design and basic medical science. As a statistician, I mainly teach workshops on statistics and I was giving two at this conference. But in addition to the workshop programme, we have various lectures and, of course, a healthy programme of social events and networking opportunities. So here's what happened when I went to the conference. Well, here I am in Cyprus. It's been a long journey, but I'm here now and it looks like a pleasant place to be to spend the next few days. So I've just arrived. I'm going to unpack and shortly I'll be meeting a whole bunch of medical writers for the first evening session. We start with a lecture, I'm not quite sure what it's about, but I'm sure I'll find out soon, and then that's followed by a drinks reception, which is a wonderful thing, because it means I'll be able to catch up with all my friends from the medical writing world, some of whom I haven't seen since the last conference, some of whom I haven't seen since the one before that, maybe some of whom I haven't seen for years, but they're a friendly bunch of people, and it will be great to see how everybody's doing. Okay, so now I'm here with Barry Drees, who's a very long-standing member of EMWA and a one-time president and an honorary fellow of EMWA, and he's going to be giving the welcome lecture this evening to talk about, what's it to talk about, Barry?
Okay, well, first of all, it's actually not this evening. It's the 20th anniversary of EMWA, so they've asked a couple of us old gray eminences to get together and share our thoughts and experiences from the early days of EMWA.
Okay, great. So were you in right at the start?
Not at the absolute beginning, but pretty soon thereafter.
So EMWA's been going for 20 years.
Hard to believe, yes,
yeah,
indeed.
And you must have been in it for...
And I've been in it for about 18, yeah, exactly.
So, so what are you talking about this evening then?
I'm not.
You're not? Oh, okay.
That was a misunderstanding.
Right.
Sorry about that.
So I'm not here with the guy who's giving the welcome talk this evening. I'm here with a cool dude anyway, who I'm sure will be entertaining when he finally does talk to us.
Well, one thing I'm going to just steal a little thunder, because I can tell you, but I will tell no one else, is that, you know, the other people that are talking with me, John and Art, are going to talk about the past, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the past. But I also want to talk about the future and the way that some of us, a few of the founding EMWA members, got together really the first year, sat in a hotel room and said, okay, what do we want to have in 5 to 10 years? We wanted an education committee, we wanted this, we wanted that, we wanted and so on. And, you know, then we hung in and made it happen. And that's the kind of thing I would like to encourage today's EMWA members to do. Think about what they want.
Where we're going to be in 5 or 10 years' time.
Exactly. Yeah. And then go out and make it happen. So it's going to be a look to the future kind of thing.
All right. Well, thanks, Barry.
My pleasure.
Okay, so now I'm at the drinks reception and I'm talking to a couple of freelance translators here who are perhaps not quite what we think of as medical writers, but it's all very much related to what we do. So, who are you?
Okay, I'm Marie-Hélène Hales. I'm a medical translator from Italian to English. I've been working as a freelance translator for 9 years now, and it was another translator who told me about EMWA in the first place a couple of years ago. And it was the workshops that really attracted me to the organisation, the idea to actually learn something, the basics of what I actually translate every day, the theoretical basis of it.
Right, so some of the science behind it then.
Exactly, yeah.
So is that what you're hoping to get out of this conference, just more of that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually a chemist as my background, but yeah, I'm doing mainly the medical workshops this time, immunology and genetics and so on, yeah, so right. Get some theoretical understanding.
Good, I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Thank you.
And Laura, I know who you are because you've been tweeting about the conference. Not very many of us tweeting, but
no,
keeping the side up. So you're a translator as well, right?
Yes, I'm a freelance translator. I've been working on medical writing for the last 10 years, but then I decided to go for a change and start, you know, living on translation. As I studied translation and interpreting at the university, so I knew I'm well because of my medical writing experience, but knowing M1 coming here is a bit different.
So what are you trying to get out of the conference? What do you want to achieve this week?
Well, I expect to learn a lot and to come back home with lots of new ideas and perspectives, I guess. That's what we are all about here.
Great, well, I'm sure it'll be fun.
Thank you.
Well, that's the first day of the conference over. The welcome lecture, it turned out, was nothing to do with medical writing at all. It was all about the history and culture of Cyprus, just to make us feel welcome to the island, so that was nice. And we've had a lovely drinks reception, and I've managed to catch up with a whole bunch of old friends and met some new people as well, which is what conferences are all about. And now it's time to bed, so more tomorrow. Well, it's Tuesday and day two of the EMWA conference. The first order of the day is a plenary lecture starting at 8 o'clock, which is all about paediatric drug development. Sounds fascinating, actually. I'd love to go to it, but I'm teaching a workshop on ANOVA and regression analysis at 9 o'clock, and I just want to make sure I'm properly prepared for that. So, unfortunately, I think I have to give the lecture a miss and just check through my notes one last time, make sure I'm all ready to go on that. Yeah, so it's a nice day here. Looking forward to it. Well, I'm sitting here with Helen, who I think might have come further for this conference than anyone else. So, Helen, tell us about who you are, where you've come from, and what kind of medical writing you do.
Well, my name's Helen Frankham, and I've come from Australia. I work for an organisation called NPS, and we're a publicly funded, although independent organisation, which provides information about medicines. To two groups, health professionals and also consumers. So I'm on the consumer side, writing for our website, and for example, I've just written a large section of a website about depression and treatment options there and so on, so that consumers can make informed decisions and weigh up their treatment options.
Right, and I guess there's very different skills you need for medical writing for patients than compared with healthcare professionals, right?
True. It's very important to get the tone right and the language right, and at the same time being accurate and conveying the correct message. So yes, it is a different.
And how do you know if you've succeeded? Do you do any kind of consumer testing with focus groups or whatever?
We do. We always have consumer reviewers involved, and we have a constant system of feedback as well for the information that we put out to make sure that we're on track.
That sounds great. So what are you hoping to get out of the conference this week then?
Well, it's some excellent workshops, one about writing for the internet, another about publication ethics, and also just the exchanging ideas with people I meet informally as well is really valuable.
Yeah, so, is it fair to say that the medical writing community is a bit more dynamic here in Europe than it is back home down under?
Oh no, I don't think that's fair at all. but certainly, it's certainly broader, and you have a large community, and of course.
Yeah, maybe dynamic wasn't the right word. I'm sure you're very dynamic.
But definitely, you have an amazing set of skilled people here who are coming to present, and so that's a really fabulous opportunity for me to come and learn from you.
Great. Well, I hope you enjoy the week.
I will. Thank you.
Okay, so now I'm here with Candy, who's not a medical writer, but she's running the whole conference. So, Candy, tell us about what your role here is.
Well, my role is organising the logistics for the whole conference, so hopefully managing to book a venue that can hold all the workshops that we run and make sure that the workshop leaders are looked after, and most importantly, all the delegates.
Well, that sounds, I mean, it's all working wonderfully well so far, but I'm guessing this is a bit like a swan gliding across the water. There's a lot going on behind the scenes that we're not necessarily aware of. Is that how it works?
There's nothing you'll ever see apart from a large grin on our face.
But I guess there's a lot of hard work
in
there.
Yeah, there's a lot of hard work.
Over many months?
Maybe around 6 months. But what's really nice is to actually be able to put faces to the email addresses that we have, so it's good to be able to see everybody here.
Yeah, well, it's all working well so far, and I'm sure it'll continue for the rest of the week.
I hope so too.
Great, thanks, Candy. Well, now I'm sitting outside in the sunshine with my friend Helen. Helen is actually one of my most dangerous competitors, but she's also a great friend, and that's just the kind of industry that medical writing is. So Helen, tell me about you and what your company does and all that sort of stuff.
Okay. Well, hi Adam. I've never been called a dangerous competitor before. I'm not very dangerous. Well, I've been coming to EMWA for the last 13 years, which was when I became a medical writer, and all the training that I've received in medical writing has in fact been thanks to EMWA, the workshops, and I absolutely love EMWA. I'm a real advocate of it. And I run a small medical writing company based in the south of France called Synopsis.
Yep, the second best medical writing company in the world, right?
Second best, yeah. Slightly better location, but...
Yeah, that's true.
But I was freelance for 7 years, and it was absolutely fantastic to be able to come to EMWA and meet other people and talk about medical writing and learn from others and share my experiences. And now, as a company owner with 9 people who work with me, it's fantastic for me to be able to bring my staff and know that they're going to get good training thanks to the organisation, thanks to the workshops. So for me, EMWA was just great, and I know I'm going to keep coming until the end of my career.
Yeah, that's great. So your company then, Synopsis, the second best medical writing company in the world, what kind of work do you do?
We do a mixture of regulatory writing and medical communications, but it's more probably 80% on the regulatory side.
Okay, so is that mostly study reports then?
Clinical study reports and protocols, but most of all nowadays it's CTDs, clinical overviews and clinical summaries.
Right.
And we like those projects because they're big, you know, big budgets, and they go on for a good few months, so they keep my staff busy. And yeah, we enjoy that part of the work. Yeah, we haven't suffered from the recession at all. We're based in France, and most of us are native English, and I think we're in a niche market where we have French clients who are very grateful that we're good at English and also understand the science. So that has really helped us, you know, in that we're quite a rare commodity. There aren't many other companies like us. So even when some companies in the UK or in the US have had a reduction in activity, our French clients can't do without us. So we've carried on being busy, and we're growing quite fast, actually.
So, yeah, good position to be in.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks, Helen. Hope you enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thanks, Adam.
Well, I'm now here with Gillian, and Gillian's got a slightly unusual background for a medical writer. Do you want to tell us about how you got into this business, Gillian?
Yes, I suppose like many people, I sort of evolved into medical writing. My role as a medic and interest in clinical pharmacology involved writing anyway. I was writing publications and protocols and things like that as an academic, and then evolved into clinical research and sort of moved through that. So I've always been writing. I never maybe thought of myself as a medical writer, really, until I thought about becoming freelance and thought, well, how do I categorise myself? And then you think, well, actually, I do writing, and it's medical writing. So, you know, why not? So I've sort of got there from the medical route, you know, writing clinical documents and using my medical experience. Right.
But I guess it's been a good few years now since you last saw a patient, has it?
It will be about 8 years. So I used to do a diabetic clinic, and I gave that up short of becoming freelance. So about eight years since I've seen a real patient.
Right. Do you miss it?
Not really. No, I don't. For me, the kind of work that I do, medical writing and being freelance, and that suits my situation just fine. So for me, it works out very well. You know, I liked doing clinical work at that time when I was doing my clinical trials and recruiting the patients and seeing the healthy volunteers. You know, I enjoyed that at that time. But since then, you know, you've evolved in your career, and now what I'm doing is fine. I like doing the, you know, the writing work, and I don't really miss the clinical work.
Right, and do you find it's helpful? Is that something your clients appreciate, that you've got the background as a medic?
Yes, I think that does make a difference. It certainly means that some of the work that I can do is a little bit different, because I can do some of the medical monitoring side of the studies as well, which is useful. And I think it's also nice when you're interpreting results, if you've got that sort of clinical aspect to it, you can tell whether, you know, is this clinically significant? Does it make sense?
Sure,
you've
got the clinical background. Something there, a lot of medical writers who are scientists rather than medics can have to, you know, learn a lot about, shall we say.
Yes, and looking at safety data, you know, is this a problem or not? Looking at adverse events and things. Yes, it's helpful there.
So this morning you went to my my workshop all about statistics, ANOVA and regression. How did you find that?
I found it very good. I mean, I've sort of acquired sort of statistics over the years, and it's something that, I suppose, like many people, you always find baffling, and it's always nice to come to a workshop and get to go over the basics again and learn some new things and be reminded what things mean. All too often you see lots of tables and outputs and thinking, gosh, what do all these numbers mean? And yes, you can ask for help in that and for statisticians to help you interpret things, but I think it's also nice if you can learn a little bit so that you know what you're looking at yourself and whether things make sense. So I find it useful.
Good.
I find it very good to do statistics.
Pleased to hear that.
Great.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think that'll do for now. Thanks very much, Gillian.
Great. Thank you. Pleasure.
Well, that's all the work part's over with for today. It's Tuesday afternoon, about 5:30. I gave my workshop on statistics stuff this morning. This afternoon, listened to an interesting lecture from someone from the European Medicines Agency about paediatric investigation plans. And then that was followed by the annual general meeting of the association, which does all the business stuff like electing new presidents and things like that. But anyway, that's done now. And the rest of the day is just all about having fun and networking and things. And we're off on a boat trip this evening, which I'm thoroughly looking forward to. So hopefully the seas will not be too rough like they were on a previous ENWA conference boat trip. Well, it's now day 3 of the conference, Wednesday, and this morning started off with a lecture from a chap from the MHRA, the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, and he was talking about some new legislation on pharmacovigilance, monitoring the safety of drugs after they've been released. There's a lot of legislation there, and I do wonder how cost-effective it is to regulate to quite that extent. Anyway, after that, I've been in a workshop. I've been learning stuff about the side effects of drugs and the pharmacology behind it, which is fascinating. And I'm just about to go back into that now. Okay, so now I'm talking to Alison McIntosh, who's a freelance medical writer. So, Alison, tell us about how you got to be a freelance medical writer.
I was employed by Glaxo Wellcome for 5 years and then decided to go freelance, and I've been freelance ever since.
And was that doing medical writing for them all that time?
Yes, it was. Different types of medical writing, medical information, and then moving into regulatory work when there was reorganisation.
Right, so you kind of started off on regulatory writing, so clinical study reports and things like that, yeah?
Initially it was responses to regulatory authorities, and then changed jobs again into writing clinical study reports, summary documents, but various new chemical entity submission documents.
And have you stuck with that kind of thing, or have you branched out a bit since you've been freelance?
As a freelance, you tend to expand in the direction of where jobs come from. So I've expanded into some areas of medcoms with manuscripts, book chapters.
That's manuscripts for publication in peer-reviewed journals, right?
Yes. Some for that, some for publishers who are producing documents for use by companies, so they want narrative reviews done on certain subject areas. But a lot of peer-reviewed manuscripts, yes.
That sounds interesting. And how long have you been coming to the ENWA conferences?
Oh, probably about 9 or 10 years.
Must enjoy it then.
I do enjoy it. I became a workshop leader quite quickly, because when you become a freelance, you don't have a manager to tell you that you can't do things. And I wanted the challenge of becoming a workshop leader and passing on your knowledge to other more inexperienced people.
Yeah, actually, I remember sending one of the people who works for me to one of your workshops in 2002. So I guess you must have been doing it for at least that long.
Yeah, I actually remember that. And I think it was the first time I presented the workshop, 2002, now
so
that you mentioned.
10 years ago, mm-hmm. Yeah. And what are you hoping to get out of this conference? Are you just teaching workshops or are you going to any as well?
No, I attend workshops as well because I have to keep my own development up to date in terms of what I can offer clients. So I've attended the seminars on the PIP, the Paediatric Information Programmes, and I am going to the medical devices to learning about all the documentation surrounding medical devices this afternoon.
All right, I'm sure that'll be fun. Thanks very much, Alison.
Thank you.
Well, now I'm here with Phil, who's a medical writer, and he's just taken on the awesome responsibility of being editor-in-chief of Emma's Journal, which is imaginatively titled Medical Writing. So, Phil, how do you feel about that? You're looking forward to the task?
I'm very much looking forward to it. I've been wanting to be a journal editor for quite a while, and I couldn't even decide between medical writing and journal editing, and now it seems I'm doing both.
So that's win-win then.
Yeah, I'm quite happy with the situation. I have big shoes to fill.
Yeah. So, the journal's already been going for a while. Are you planning to carry on with pretty much the same or take it in new directions?
Well, I mean, I'd like to continue to expand it into some certain territories that haven't really been touched on very much, like medical communication, medical writing education, medical journalism, for example. In addition, Elise was handling everything herself. And there's really no reason that somebody should have to do that, and there's probably no practical way that somebody can do that in the future. So I plan on ruling by committee rather than as a single person.
Yeah, very wise. And do you want to just tell us about what you do for your day job then? Mm.
Well, my day job is at a company called Four Clinics in Paris, France, and I'm a medical writer there, and I specialize almost exclusively in writing publications for peer-reviewed publications. On the side, I do a little bit of other stuff, but on the side of that, I'm actually teaching now too in a couple different venues.
Is that a university thing? Or?
Yeah, so I was involved in the Innsbruck medical writing program there, which is not going to continue, but it looks like we're hoping to move that to Berlin, and I'm also going to be teaching in a medical English sort of master's program in Paris. And then hopefully also through another program called Management Forum, which will be in London, which is
right.
just a short program.
Helping to train the next generation of medical writers.
Yeah, especially in publication writing. I mean, this is really, I think it's got everything in it. It's an art form in terms of the writing. It's heavy on analysis. You have to have an understanding of many, many different kinds of areas of medical writing to be able to do it well.
All right, well, that's great. Thanks very much, Phil. Enjoy the rest of the conference.
My pleasure, thank you.
Well, it's now about 7 o'clock on Wednesday evening, and we've done all the hard work for the day. I went to a workshop this morning to learn about pharmacology of adverse drug effects, which was fascinating. I taught a workshop this afternoon about critical appraisal of medical literature, which I think went down well. And then we had a little lecture on the history of EMWA. It's 20 years old at this conference, so there was a little talk by some old members just to mark the occasion, which is quite interesting. And now the fun starts, off to a drinks reception followed by the conference dinner, which is always good for a laugh. Well, now I'm here with Julia Cooper, who's an extremely senior medical writer. So can you tell us about what you do for your day job, Julia?
Yes, okay. So I'm the worldwide head of medical writing at Paraxel.
Paraxel is one of the big global contract research organisations.
Yes, for people who don't know Paraxel, it's a CRO. So I manage a team of medical writers who are located across North and South America, Europe and Asia. We're about 65 at the moment.
Okay.
And my role is to sort of oversee the whole operation and just make sure that the documents that we're preparing are the right quality and standard that our clients expect. And these days, you know, we're working with a variety of clients, so we work with very small companies ranging up to the big farmers, and probably people have heard that we're involved in sort of various strategic partnerships where it's a slightly different kind of arrangement with the client. Really what that means is for us in medical writing that we get a lot more vision into the kind of work that's coming to us, so I know the kind of projects that I've got coming in 2 or 3 years' time. Whereas I would say like 2 or 3 years ago, I would probably only known what kind of work we've got coming in about 3 to 4 months.
Right, that must help you to plan a lot then.
It makes a huge difference, yes. So I can work out which writers I need in which locations, what kind of skill set they need to have. I can make sure that we've recruited the right people and got them trained up in time, as opposed to responding to short notice requests where people say, have you got a writer next week? Which we're still doing as well, but it's the balance between those sort of two different kinds of arrangements.
Right, and I guess if you're not doing too much of that short notice stuff, it's easier to fit it in.
I wouldn't say it's a small amount at the moment. It's kind of about probably half and half.
Okay.
But it just having that sort of two different kinds of mix makes it easier for me to plan out my resource.
So I guess one of the things you're involved is recruiting new medical writers.
Yes. Yeah? Yes, definitely.
Is that an easy thing to do? Hard to do? How do you find medical writers?
It's very difficult to recruit good, experienced medical writers. I think that's always been the case. For us, it's becoming easier because we are a big team, so we can offer them lots of different opportunities, so we can attract in people who have that sort of experience. But we do also still recruit people at entry level and train them up.
And I guess it's a lot easier to find people then, is it?
It's very easy to find people who want to come in at entry level, and it's getting easier to find people at that more experienced level.
Okay, well, thanks very much for that, Julia.
You're welcome.
Interesting insight into your little world.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, it's Thursday morning, day 4 of the conference. Haven't got such an early start today. No 8 o'clock lecture, so just a workshop at 9 o'clock. So I've had time for a swim in the pool before breakfast, which is very pleasant. So this morning I'm going to a workshop to learn all about cancer vaccines, which is going to be quite useful for me because I'm doing quite a lot of work on cancer vaccines at the moment in my day job. So hopefully I'll pick up some useful tips. And then this afternoon, I'm going to a workshop to observe a new workshop leader who's giving his first workshop at EMWA, and they like to have one of the old hands around just to see how he does and offer some tips and support as needed. So hopefully he'll do well. So that's on today's programme. Okay, well now I'm sitting in the hotel lobby having a coffee with Sunetha Wimalasundara, and she's a very important person at this conference because she was the conference director. So, Sunetha, how was that to be responsible for organising all this?
It was a lot of fun. I think I learnt a lot. Initially, it was a huge learning curve. Having never taken on tasks such as this before, it was quite daunting at first, but I had a lot of help from the EC members, and we worked very well as a team, and you know, the tasks were not so daunting because working within a very interactive team.
So you didn't have to organise the education programme yourself, for example, because that's a big job, isn't it?
No, of course. I have great respect for the PDP and Joe and Stephen.
But a lot of the other talks we've had, not part of the educational programme, that's really all down to you, isn't it?
Yeah, well, no, that's not entirely true. The subcommittee, as you know, are very heavily involved in it. I never make those decisions on my own. I always pass it through the subcommittee. And also the subcommittee allows a broader spectrum of speakers to be invited. And it's important to have different conference directors because they bring with them different set of skills as well as different subcommittee with different contacts. And I really think that role should be a yearly contract rather than...
Because you've been doing it for 2 years,
two years,
right? And
yeah.
You've just stepped down now at this conference.
That's right, yeah. So I think it's a position that should be for a year. And then you get a better...
Get a bit of fresh blood.
Yes,
ideas.
And there's a lot of new delegates coming in with great ideas, and you know, we it's up to us to make sure that we encourage them and get them on board, or at least in the subcommittee. And I think it was one of the comments by Barry. Yeah, so what else can I say about my conference director role? The opportunities to meet new people beyond my normal day-to-day activities, such as the hotel staff and the organising the ground staff, getting to know KSM. It was an invaluable experience that I'm sure will come in use at some stage of my life.
Great. So in your day job then, I gather you're not exactly a medical writer anymore.
No, and that's not without regret. I thoroughly enjoyed my medical writing, but I...
So how long were you doing medical writing before
6 years.
You... Okay.
6 years, and I dabbled in both medical communication as well as regulatory writing, but I got to a point in my life that I really needed new challenges.
Okay.
And I am quite keen to develop in oncology as well as immunology, and I had been in oncology for a little bit, and this role came along, and it was an offer I couldn't refuse. It allowed me to broaden my skill set and also to get more involved in the immunological side.
And what exactly is your role?
I am a clinical scientist, which means that I am involved in the study design, assessing the safety signals of the study. At the moment, I'm only involved in phase 3 studies, but eventually will be progressing to writing, study design. And
right. And was it useful to have been a medical writer? Was that a good experience that has helped you with that role?
At the moment, no, just because of the tasks I am doing. But I think at a higher role, yes, because it allowed me to have a great understanding of the regulatory requirements, understanding of the documents that need to be submitted. So yes, I think eventually, really my position now, I'm doing a much more junior role in the clinical science, because it's essential to have that sort of, you know, grounding.
Yeah, before you can
before
progress
I can
again.
Go to the more advanced things that I probably will find a lot easier because of my medical writing background.
Right. And you said you enjoy working with immunology and oncology, so I guess that's why you decided to develop the workshop that I came to this morning on
that's
cancer
right.
vaccines.
Yes, and although it's a huge area, and I initially, my proposal to the EPDP was...
the Educational Committee, right.
Educational yeah. Committee was quite extensive, and you can't do all of the different types of cancer vaccine justice in 3.5 hours.
And yeah, it's a fascinating area of research, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And thank you for the suggestion of expanding my workshop. I don't mind, I will consider it seriously to extend it beyond cell-based vaccines.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed it anyway.
Thank you.
Sunetra, thanks very much for that.
Thank you.
Well, I've just been at a fascinating seminar on paediatric trials, and one of the other delegates at the seminar with me was Christopher, who's a head of medical writing in a pharmaceutical company, and I gather it was the paediatrics as one of your main motivations for coming to this conference.
Absolutely, because we are entering into more and more paediatric studies, and of course there is in the companies today a limited amount of knowledge about how to do these studies, experience, and when you come to the meeting and you hear from the experts the complexity of the requirements over and above that what you'd need for a standard trial, particularly in the direction of soft skills, consent, regional specificities, and then you realize that you need to get good advice. And I certainly found here in the various sessions that we had various people giving good advice, and I certainly learned a lot.
Yeah, and I guess one of the problems with the paediatric regulations is they're still relatively new, and people are still feeling their way. I mean, both us and the regulators, right?
Absolutely. I feel a bit like when they introduced the CTA, some people were writing very comprehensive CTAs and some people were writing very brief CTAs. And I think with the PIP it's exactly the same, and we just have to find a good compromise where everyone's happy.
All right. Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
Well, this has been a themed conference. We often have a theme for our conferences, and the theme this year has been paediatrics because there's a lot of new regulations around about paediatric clinical trials. And as part of that theme, we've invited Jane Lamprell to give a couple of talks to us at the conference. I'm sitting here with Jane now. So, Jane, tell us about what you do.
Well, first of all, Adam, I'd like you to thank you very much indeed for your very kind invitation to the European Medical Writers Association. It's been a privilege and a joy for me to be here. And I've learned a lot as well. And what I do is they called me a paediatric research consultant, which sounds like I swan about in Mercedes and stuff, but not. It's just me. And my background is paediatric trained nurse at Great Ormond Street, and I have 17 years of clinical trials experience. I'm also a trained children's writer, and I've published a few little books. So what's been nice is to be able to combine all the different hats that I wear, including an ethics committee hat, and I now save companies time and money in the paediatric clinical trial planning stage. So I help them with protocol feasibility, for example, writing information sheets for all ages from 5 to 85. And generally get alongside people and help them along the way to save them time and money.
Well, I've been to both the talks you did, and they were fascinating stuff. And one thing that really struck me from the talk you gave yesterday was some of the mismatch between the expectations of regulators and what's actually ethical. And that you mentioned a couple of examples where regulators were expecting pharmaceutical companies to do clinical trials in children that an ethics committee might be a bit concerned about. What do you think is going on there?
It's very, very difficult to generalise, and certainly it's very important to attack problems and not people. But because everybody is in a learning curve together about how to do paediatric clinical trials, you need to balance the ethical need for proper medicines in children, because until 2007 there wasn't a legal requirement to test medicines in children. So these have to be very scientifically validated and planned to make sure you get the best possible data to make sure that medicines are safe and effective for children. But at the same time, you need to make sure that the studies that are being requested by regulators are acceptable by ethics committees, families, and most importantly, the children. Now, there have been instances in the last few years of things that have been requested that actually haven't been granted ethics permission in Europe. So companies have had to go further afield to more developing countries, perhaps where the local population doesn't have medicine given to them freely at the point of delivery. So therefore there's more of an incentive for them to take part in clinical trials. And these are huge ethical issues. My slight problem is that because this is going on the internet, I'm bound by confidentiality. So it's not a get out, but I'm not allowed to give specific examples. Yeah. But if anybody wants to ask me privately, you know, I wouldn't be able to name any companies and only anything in the public domain. But it is of concern that ethics committees are having difficulty. And that means that even if a study has got through the ethics committee, that may still be slow to recruit because there may be, for example, too many blood tests or too many visits, which are unacceptable for busy families and children, of course.
But still, I think it's a very positive development that we have this new regulation about paediatric trials, isn't it? Because in the past, there's just been not nearly enough known about how drugs work in children.
Absolutely, and there have been one of the reasons why the regulators and the governments were so concerned, because there have been several deaths as a result of children being given medicines that were supposed to be taken by adults. And also, when a child receives a medicine that hasn't been tested in children, that means that's an experiment of N equals one. So the paediatrician needs to be informed when he's prescribing his medicines for children, so that he can be really aware of stuff like safety, efficacy. And it might be they found that some children need more drug, not less drug. For example, children who have epilepsy, because their basal metabolic rate is much higher and they run around and burn the drug off quicker. So all sorts of things have been found out. And there's a very nice paper by Flynn in 2003, which says that since the American paediatric regulations came on board, the children are are no, because of the new drugs that are being developed for them, children are no longer viewed as therapeutic orphans, but at the same time, the best interests of the individual children taking part in the study should always be protected.
Well, it sounds like we're definitely heading in the right direction.
Absolutely.
And hopefully
Absolutely.
Some of these teething problems of the way the new regulations are working will soon be ironed out and we'll
Absolutely.
Be moving forward positively.
Yes, and teething problems do always happen in anything, as you say. But I think to a certain extent, we'll go from teething problems to growing pains, probably. and hopefully not teenage tantrums.
Full range of paediatric problems, right?
Yeah, but handled in a positive way and with everybody working together and looking out for the needs of other people involved in paediatric research, then it can only be a win-win.
Great. All right. Thanks very much, Jane.
That's okay.
Well, now I'm sitting talking to Marion Hodges, who has a rather different medical writing job to a lot of people here. We often think of medical writers as mainly serving the pharmaceutical industry, but that's not what Marion does. So tell us about what you do for your day job, Marion.
Well, I work for NICE in the UK. That's the National Institute for Health and Clinical Excellence. We produce clinical guidelines and also do technology appraisals, looking at the value for money of drugs within the NHS in the UK, and lots of other things as well. And my team are responsible for editing all of the guidance that comes out of NICE.
And making sure it kind of makes sense, bit of a sanity check, that sort
yes,
of thing.
Yes, but yes, definitely a sanity check, but more than that as well. We work closely with, for example, our guideline development groups in writing the recommendations to try to make sure that they are clear and unambiguous. We also write the information for patients on the guidance that we produce in the clinical area. And most recently, we've really got into the digital side of things by producing some things called NICE Pathways. NICE Pathways are a sort of digital representation of all of the guidance that NICE has produced in a certain area. And the role of the editors is to actually generate those pathways using Microsoft Visio.
Right, so it just makes it a bit easier to find what you're looking for.
It makes it easier to find what you're looking for. It's much easier to find the links between the different pieces of guidance that we produced in a particular area, and we've got lots of ideas for how they might develop in the future.
So obviously it's quite different in some ways from what more traditional medical writers are doing, writing study reports of drug trials and things, but it sounds like there's also some things in common in that you as writers are collaborating quite closely with the people who've done the work on which the reports are based, yeah?
Yes, we're working closely. We work with groups who are looking at the evidence on the areas that they're working on a topic. And of course, the sources behind that are the sort of documents that the people here are working on, clinical study reports, expert reviews.
Right.
And a lot of health economic information.
Yeah, because that's an important part
yeah,
of
is.
What NICE does.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you used to work as a medical writer doing some of the more traditional stuff in your previous existence. How does it compare what you're doing now?
Yes, well, before I was a freelance medical writer working both for pharmaceutical companies and with the medical communications side of things. It is different. I mean, for me personally, it's different now because I'm far more involved in management and planning. But for the editors that work in the team, it's a bit different in that we're not involved in regulatory submissions. But as I said, there is the need for substantive editing and really looking at the detail of things and making sure that things are clear and accurate is exactly the same.
Good. All right. Well, thanks very much, Marion. Well, the conference is over now. It's Saturday morning and the conference finished yesterday. But there's a few of us staying over the weekend since we've come such a long way. And I've just been having breakfast with the most important person in EMWA, Susan Barty, who's just taken over as EMWA president as of this week. So, Susan, congratulations on the new role.
Thank you, Adam.
What are your thoughts on being president of this fine association?
Well, I'm obviously very pleased now to be president of EMWA. I'm looking forward to a year where we will be trying to set up alliances with some other organisations who are also involved in medical writing, and I'd like to continue our links, which have been started at this conference, with the European Medicine Agencies as well.
Okay, the regulators.
That's right. Who have expressed a desire to work with medical writers in order to improve the standards of the documents that they are getting in order to reduce their own workload. So I think this could be very exciting. And I know that other organisations in the regulatory affairs, which is really where I come from, have very close contacts with the European Medicines Agencies, particularly TOPRA, which is the Organisation of Regulatory Professionals, set up joint workshops. And I think that if the European Medicines Agency is reaching out to EMWA, it would be a very good idea for us to try to forge these relationships so that we can help to improve the standards of regulatory writing in Europe.
And I guess then medicines get approved quickly, people save money, patients get to benefit sooner.
Absolutely.
Absolute win-win all round, yeah?
Absolutely.
Oh, well, good luck with that. That sounds like a worthy initiative. And looking more widely at the world of medical writing in general, how do you see the profession at the moment? What are the good things? What are the challenges facing us?
Well, I think that one of the challenges we have is that people don't know about us. We're quite specialised, and I think we need to try to get the word out there about what we do and what we can contribute. We really, I think, need to be more present in the media, more present on electronic media, for instance, so that people realise what we do and realise the value that we can add.
Excellent. So if you have one message about what medical writers can do, what would it be?
Medical writers can add value to a lot of processes, whether they be regulatory or other communication processes. We are excellent communicators, and please spread the word.
Excellent. Thank you. So for your day job, Susan, you say you work in regulatory, which is kind of not quite the same thing as medical writing, is it?
No, though it has a very close contact with medical writing, because we are collating the documents that have been put together by medical writers. And as with anything, part of regulatory affairs is getting a message across. And the more concisely and clearly you can get that message across, the better the chances that your dossier is going to be read and understood and approved quickly. And in regulatory affairs, I find it very challenging. There's a lot of communication involved in it, so it's linked closely to medical writing in that respect.
And you used to work in medical writing before
I've written a lot of documents myself. So
I guess that was a very useful experience.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I have within my team at work three medical writers doing medical writing, I hasten to add.
Good. Well, thanks very much for that, Susan, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the weekend here.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this little tour of the world of medical writing. If you want to know more about EMWA, do visit their website at www.emwa.org. This has been Adam Jacobs of Dianthus Medical, podcasting from the world of medical writing. Bye for now.